She's a real woman with a real life. She's someone you can relate to. Dawn Newton.
Welcome to the Dawn Newton Podcast. I am your host, Dawn Newton. Today, Dr. Michelle Jackson joins me. We're talking all things GLP-1 agonists, most commonly known as Ozempic. Today is part one, where we do a deeper dive. We do the science about a GLP-1. Dr. Jackson is here to discuss the history, the regenerative healing benefits. Did you know that our body naturally produces the GLP-1 peptide? Now, part two will be coming up in a few weeks, where Dr. Jackson will discuss the weight loss benefits, how to utilize a GLP-1 to reduce your glucose, to lower that A1C that will have the benefits of weight loss. But you also need to be aware of the side effects, dosing, if you want to stop taking a GLP-1. Who is this right for? Who is it not for? So all this and more in parts one and two, talking all things GLP-1 with Dr. Michelle Jackson.
Dr. Michelle Jackson, thank you again for coming in. Today we're talking about GLP-1s, and maybe people don't understand, like, what is a GLP-1? What are we talking about? I think if we mentioned Ozempic or Wegovy, Mounjaro, that might ring a bell, but we're talking the scientific terms and doing a deeper dive on these semiglutides and the GLP-1, because there's so much information out there, and I think it's been given somewhat of a bad rap, but I think understanding the history of it and the other uses. So this isn't going to be necessarily a conversation about weight loss and how to use it to lose weight, as we see on social media and all the commercials, but more about what is this peptide, the history, and the other uses for it, because there's a lot of information that we're not being told.
Absolutely. Yes, there's a lot to be told about this peptide, or if you feel like thinking about it as a protein that your body makes, if you can understand that better, that's the way to think of it versus a drug. It really is a peptide or protein, the GLP-1s that our body makes.
We already make this peptide, which that was something I didn't understand when I was, you know, just researching for our conversation, talking about the GLP-1 and Ozempic. I guess I'll just use that since that seems to be the universal definition for it or name, is that it's not necessarily, it is something that we already make. This is just helping regenerative.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yes. Definitely. So what Ozempic is, which is approved for diabetes, or Wegovy, which is approved for obesity, they're injectable. So you have to inject it with a needle. GLP-1 agonist. So those medications, Ozempic, Wegovy, and oftentimes I just end up using the name semaglutide. Semaglutide is the active ingredient. You could think of it as the generic of Ozempic and Wegovy, because Ozempic and Wegovy are semaglutide. They're patented a little differently. But these medications, they just mimic or act like a protein, that peptide GLP-1 that our bodies naturally make. So they are just the semaglutide is just acting like this protein that we naturally make every day, all the time.
And what was interesting, too, is the history. I mean, just there's a ton of history on this. I mean, I don't know how far back we can go, to the 1920s, 1930s, when not necessarily the GLP-1 that we see today, but how it was being looked at and researched. And what was going on there, that I thought that was a little mind-blowing.
And there's a lot that I went back and researched, too, that was just really cool. You know, Ozempic was approved in 2017 for the treatment of diabetes. And so it really kind of gained popularity after that, because then what happened is people noticed, oh, there's a lot of, you know, weight loss with people who were on Ozempic. So then it started to be prescribed off-label for weight loss, but eventually in 2021 is when Wegovy was patented. But all of this, you know, GLP-1 research, you could say it could begin all the way back in like the 1920s when insulin was discovered and which is the hormone our body produces that controls blood sugar. Kind of what happened in 2020, and it was actually 1922, when insulin was discovered, but then they just kept researching. And I think it was like in the early 1930s that scientists discovered there was a hormone in the GI tract. They didn't figure out what it was, but was responsible for telling the pancreas to release insulin. So kind of this research on eventually these GLP-1 agonists, you know, can go back to the 20s and the 30s. And then in the 1960s is when the scientists were able to discover there was a hormone called GIP, which stands for glucose. This is a mouthful. Dependent insulinotropic peptide. And they figured that this peptide was responsible for secreting insulin. So that's when, in the 1960s, this is when the research for GLP-1 really, really got going. And they figured, man, there must be another hormone that signals all of these processes.
And was this the intent with the insulin and glucose levels and diabetes? Was that what this research was focused on?
Yeah, it really was, because these drug companies, which, we all at times badmouth the drug companies and what they're doing, and there's obviously some things to that, but because insulin for early people with early diabetics, they had to inject the insulin. You have to inject it several times a day, and it's according to where your blood sugars are at. So people were having to inject insulin multiple times during the day. So the idea is how can we better control people's blood sugars with getting a different form of insulin or something else that helps control blood sugars without, again, multiple injections, because there's concerns with injecting over and over again. So the intent was, of course, drug companies want to make money and find a drug that they can make money for, but the intent is actually to help people control their blood sugars more effectively.
And is there a test where can we test, we go in for some blood work, is there a slot there for a GLP-1 or a semaglutide to test us and see where we're at?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. No, because GLP-1 only lasts about, I think it's like 5 minutes. I've heard everything from like 1 minute to 5 minutes or so in our body. Now, I wouldn't be surprised at some point if they were able to test, be able to test it, but not, because it's kind of it doesn't last very long. So this is kind of interesting. So further along, like again, in these 60s, they're thinking, man, there's got to be something that's controlling insulin and this GIP. And then it wasn't until the 1980s when cloning became available, genetic cloning, that they were able to clone the GLP-1 gene. And then that was super exciting, because they realized that, there's this GLP-1, but it didn't last very long in their body. And this was like in the 1980s that really GLP-1 was discovered, and they were doing research on it. And again, this GLP-1, I'm talking about semaglutide, Ozempic. So even though it feels new, hard research, these GLP-1 agonists have been going on, for how many years now? 40 something years? Yeah, which that's why I feel like they are very safe. And I don't know if we'll talk about today or next time we talk, there's your side effects and everything else. I do think some of it's been blown out of proportion, or in the 80s, they were really starting to research this GLP-1. This is really cool. In the 1990s, there was this biochemist and gastroenterologists that were working together, and they were working with the poisonous venom of the Gila monster. And they discovered a hormone in the venom that worked on the same receptor as GLP-1. And they realized this molecule in this venom was not as quickly metabolized. The GLP-1 lasted longer in the body. So they realized what is this Gila monster able to do with this GLP-1 type peptide? And so that's what people kind of got really excited about, trying to tweak this GLP-1 and trying to figure out how to last, how it could last longer in the body, because it was lasting longer in this Gila monster. So finally, in 2005, I think the FDA approved Byetta was a longer acting GLP-1, but I think you had to inject that a couple times a day. So once again, these drug companies are just trying to find a more sustainable form of the GLP-1. Because with Byetta, it was used for treating diabetes, but they noticed the same thing. People were losing weight. So they had, the off-label use. People were using it for weight loss. Oh, yeah, it was two times a day. You had to do the injections of two times a day of Byetta. And that was in 2005. And then finally, in the mid-90s, there was a Danish scientist. There was a female, so I always want to do a shout-out to her. Name was Lottie Knutson. She was working for Novo Nordisk. She'd been working on this GLP-1 agonist for years, and they said, hey, you've got one more year to figure this out, a stable GLP-1 agonist, or we got to pull the plug. And she did. And what she did is she added a fatty acid onto the GLP-1 molecule. What happens with that fatty acid, then it's not broken down so fast. And so the natural GLP-1 is broken down within 5 minutes, but with this fatty acid added on it, which is semaglutide, that it last for 7 days. So that's why you can inject it just once a week. So really, even though it feels like this class of drugs is quote-unquote new, they've been studying it. When a drug goes for approval with the FDA, they do animal trials, and then they do human trials. And so these medications have been tested and in these trials since the 1990s. And that's also one of those why I feel like they're probably pretty safe when used appropriately.
Well, and it's just so fascinating, that history of it, because like I said earlier, it just seems like this is a brand new celebrity that just got discovered, and the celebrity's been schlepping it for a long time, the study. So I think that fairness to it and the other things that it does, I mean, yes, our next talk will be talking more about the weight loss and how it's used and that part of it. But I think the other piece that is missed and I think is so important is the other things, the other benefits that it's bringing to the body. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty fascinating, the immune system, skeletal muscles, the liver, kidney. I mean, I really want to talk about those things, like the brain, what it does in the brain for us. It's not just a one and done, kind of like one trick pony. There's so many other things it's been used for.
Again, because it's a peptide, and it's made by, or one place we know it's made, and this is why it's used so much for like weight loss and diabetes, is in, I think it's the L cells in the gut. I could have that letter wrong. We don't know if it's made in other parts of our body, but we do know there's receptors for GLP-1, like you said, in our brain, blood vessels. So it wouldn't be surprising if it's made other places. But I think the underlying theme of maybe why it's helping with so many things is it seems to have an anti-inflammatory effect. And inflammation is certainly the backbone or the cause of many, 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 many diseases. So what they're finding in the brain is that it's neuroprotective. Like if the GLP-1s are reducing inflammation in the brain and it seems to be improving brain health. There seems to be a reduction for a risk of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. In fact, I think there was a recent big study. Yes, it was from October of 2017 to December of 2023. The Washington School of Medicine and the Veterans Affairs in St. Louis, they looked at the health records of like 2 million veterans who were being treated for diabetes. And some of these veterans took GLP-1 medications. Other ones were given, more traditional diabetes drugs like metformin, Giardian, and they were trying to find out if the GLP-1s had other positive effects on the organ systems. And they found that there was tons of things that it helped with, that there was less suicidal thought in these veterans. There was even less eating disorders such as bulimia, there is less schizophrenia, dementia. And this was a long-term study. It was from, again, well, they went back and they looked at the health records, but really they were all these health records from 2017 to 2023. And I think a lot of, maybe some people have heard about with the GLP-1s, it, people say, oh, that they just, you know, they're not as hungry or they don't have cravings. And it seems like that it's also helping with other addictive disorders, you know, like addictions, alcoholism, that, and I think it's because these GLP-1s sit on different receptors in our brain having to do with dopamine and impulse control. It's kind of wild. And there's more. We can keep going over the whole list of besides brain. There's blood vessels, immune system, all kinds of things.
Talk about the liver, because that's when, I mean, we hear about fatty liver disease. I think there's probably more people that have it that don't and don't even know that we have it. Sure. Fatty liver disease and what that's doing. But this is shown just increases the healing part. I mean, the word regenerative is used a lot with the GLP-1 yes. treatments.
Yeah, and just to backtrack too, I was talking about semaglutide, and this might be too detailed for some people. There's also tirzepatide. That is the GLP-1, but it also works on a second peptide called GIP, glucose-dependent insulinotropic factor peptide. And it seems like some of the liver benefits, a little bit more beneficial with the GLP-1 and the GIP, but they both seem to be helping be regenerative to the liver. And I think it has something to do with that these medications help decrease glucose production in the liver. The liver produces a lot of glucose. And when you have extra glucose around in your bloodstream, your body stores it as fat in the liver. And that's what fatty liver disease is. And it just doesn't allow your liver enzymes to work appropriately, which affects detox, et cetera. So it seems like by being able to control glucose and glucose production, then your body goes, oh, I don't need to store this fat, but I can use it as energy. We call it metabolic flexibility. It allows your body to be more flexible in what you need to use the glucose for. They also seem to be lowering triglycerides, which is a part of, if anybody's looked at their cholesterol panel, triglycerides is part of it. And triglycerides are the cholesterol our body makes when there is extra glucose in the bloodstream. They really seem to be helping you burn more fat as fuel, but also just having less glucose in the bloodstream so you don't have to store it as fat. Also skeletal muscle, just because we're talking about that, the effect that the GLP-1s have on skeletal muscle, it increases the glucose into the muscle cells so you can use the glucose as fuel. And it seems to be also increasing flexibility. Like I've had some patients feel like they're just able to move more, like they're more flexible. They're not feeling as stiff. So yeah, there's just all kinds of fascinating, I don't want to say side effects, other effects besides weight loss and glucose reduction. Although I feel like a lot of these other benefits are because the glucose is lower in the bloodstream everywhere in your body.
And I think that's the thing that sometimes I know I missed is realizing how the body, if you take away, I don't know, the emotional part or the vanity part or the things, if we start really thinking about how this works inside, like the machine.
Yeah.
You know, how that glucose does impact. I mean, the diabetes, mm-hmm. for one, how it impacts your eyesight, the kidneys, the liver. I mean, all of it, because it all runs through your body. Well, and the heart, the benefits to the heart, I thought that was pretty interesting, too.
As
you said earlier, decreasing the triglycerides, which is important for the heart, but also the cardiac output.
Yeah, and your heart is a muscle. And I was thinking about this, too. So because it seems like the GLP-1s help take glucose into the muscle cells so you can use it for energy, since your muscle is a heart, if it's able to utilize that glucose as fuel and be able to contract better, like your heart muscle contracting better, therefore you get better blood flow throughout your whole body, I think that's why they're noticing cardiac output improving. Also, it seems to be lower, the GLP-1s lower blood pressure. Also, because the blood vessels, when there's a lot of glucose in your bloodstream, they become more constricted and narrow. And you can think about it just like with a pipe, that if if the pipe has gotten narrower, it takes more pressure to move water through the pipe. If you're able to relax that and clear out the pipe, you don't need as much pressure to force the water through the pipe. So it seems like the GLP-1s are causing vasodilation, so it's bringing down blood pressure. That's going to help. It's pretty amazing. Now, I have heard some conflicting information about kidney. I saw one study. It was called the study that I think I might have mentioned this at our last talk last week. They had people on. It was a double blind study, and some participants were on GLP-1 agonists, and then others were on placebo. And these were people with kidney disease, and they were trying to find out the effect of the GLP-1 agonist on kidney disease. And so many people's kidney function was getting better on the GLP-1s that they halted the study because they didn't feel like it was fair. The people were getting placebo. You know, they weren't getting these amazing benefits that the people who are on the GLP-1 now. But I have also seen some studies where it seemed like some of the kidney, for some people, the kidney function, I don't want to say got worse, but they had to watch the numbers a little bit. So the kidney function, before I put someone on some of the GLP-1s, I just make sure we do what's called a chemistry panel, which runs liver and kidney function, just to be like, okay, if you already have kidney disease, even though some of the studies are saying it's helping with kidney disease, I need to have a conversation with people like, hey, there might be some conflicting information. But if overall the GLP-1 agonists are regenerative, I can't imagine why it wouldn't be helpful for the kidneys as well.
It seems like the glucose piece is maybe a common denominator or factor in all of these issues, these health issues, whether it's kidney or heart, liver. Yeah. I mean, there seems to be this fatty thing, the extra fat, the extra sugar. Yeah. And it seems like the weight loss or maybe the reduced appetite or cravings, I mean, that seems like a positive. As far as like talking with a physician about maybe my A1C is not in the diabetic level, would somebody, how would that conversation go when you're, you know, hearing something like this and doing your research and then wanting to talk to your physician about it? Does it have to be prescribed due to diabetes or an A1C number?
That's a great question. So the semaglutide, which is the active ingredient in Ozempic and Wegovy, that is it's relatively inexpensive to make. Why the medications are Ozempic, Wegovy are so expensive, it's the pen. It's the way it's being dispersed in the injection pens. That's what's patented. And that's what costs so much money. So in order for people to get improved via their insurance company to be on Ozempic or Wegovy, your doctor ends up going through some proving that they need to be on it because it is so expensive. But you can get compounded prescriptions of semaglutide or tirzepatide through compounding pharmacies. And compounding pharmacies are pharmacies that make prescriptions on site. You still have to inject it, but it's one of those things where you draw up the injection yourself and inject it, and it's not this automatic pen dose. And that way, you can get the medications by going through a compounding pharmacy and your doctor. And what happens there is oftentimes the dose needs to be much, much lower than what dispersed by the pen, the Ozempic, Wegovy pens. And so if you have say mild insulin resistance or your A1C is creeping up a little bit, I think that's a perfect example of let's get this under control before I become diabetic. It's kind of that mindset of preventative medicine that is not practiced enough. Like, yeah, we're often going back and treating the disease when we really should be preventing the disease.
Oh, absolutely. Through education, conversations like that. this. Well, and that's something you had mentioned too, the low dose. I hear about microdosing as opposed to maybe what is prescribed when we see how it starts out is what, 0.25 and then a half and then one, and it goes from there. Talk about that microdosing, because that it is specific. It's not a one size fits all type of thing. It is depending on how your body responds to it and how you feel.
No, absolutely. I've kind of taken this back, but I used to say I'm not an Ozempic fan, but I'm a GLP-1 agonist or semaglutide fan. And why I was saying that was I feel like the dose of Ozempic, Wegovy, is probably too high for many people, not everybody. Because if you think about it, if you think of this GLP-1 as a peptide our body produces, say you need, so a patient needs thyroid medication, and I give them 100 times the dose that their thyroid naturally makes. Well, yeah, there's going to be side effects from that. I feel like that's probably the same with Ozempic and Wegovy. When you keep increasing these doses and do high doses, it's probably a much, much, much higher dose of GLP-1 than your body is naturally producing. I could be wrong, but I feel like over time, the doses of these GLP-1s are going to get lower and lower to more mimic what our bodies are is naturally doing. But the way to do, and also the advantage of not doing set doses where you just keep increasing the Ozempic dose is, say someone has some side effects. Well, you probably don't want to keep increasing the dose if you're having side effects. And like you said, everybody is different. I've had some people on some high doses of semaglutide, no nausea, no constipation. I've had other people, the starting dose, they have nausea, constipation. So you just, you know, you got to treat everybody as an individual.
Well, I think too, realizing, and we'll say it, I don't know how many times we'll say it in this conversation, but we'll definitely say it in the next one, is that it's not a fix, it's a tool. And I think that is, unfortunately, what we're seeing in social media is that if you just take this injection of this semi-glutide, Ozempic, or whichever one you're using, the weight's just going to come off. And you got to do your part. It's not, it's not the fix.
Right. Yeah, to quote, you know, Tina Moore, which I know you've listened to some of her stuff too, you have to do the things. So, for example, I'm not just, or hopefully any doctor who's prescribing these medications, they're not just giving you a shot and on your way, You know, there needs to be some counseling on hitting your protein macros. I mean, you need protein to build muscle, weight-bearing exercise. That's just so important to keep your muscle strength up. And we hear about all the time, like, oh, people are losing, you know, so much muscle. And that's true. But if you study people and that's the folks that are doing these higher doses of the semaglutide, and therefore they're not hungry. So they're therefore on a calorie deficit diet. Well, if you look at the studies of people who are on any very low calorie deficit diet, they lose muscle. Like, the amount of muscle that people are losing with Ozempic on the high doses is actually almost exactly the same as people who have been on these very low-calorie diets. So it's not actually it's not a phenomenon that's different. It's just so much more in the media because so many people, you know, are using these and taking these medications. So like you said, you've got to do it right. It's important for your doctor, I feel like, to look at before going on these. Thyroid function? Are your female hormones in balance? It's the whole picture.
Well, it is a whole picture, whether there's thyroid, the hormones, like you said. There's so many other things that could factor into it that, you know, it's like keeping all those plates spinning at a good speed, trying to, you know, because the body is a machine. It's just so fascinating. I think, I mean, and I can speak from my own experience, like, well, why doesn't it just work? Like, just make it do its thing. And it's like, well, I've had to learn the hard way that isn't always the case. And that point about losing muscle, if you know, anytime we lose weight really fast, if you're not doing some form of exercise to help keep that muscle going, taking enough protein, the atrophy sets in, you know, things kind of disappear or maybe sag a little bit unless you start like, okay, now I've lost the weight, I want to firm up. typically is what usually you hear. And sometimes I think, and this is from social media, and I've heard it a few times, is that the food industry is a little nervous about the GLP-1s and the success that it's having with people with the appetite, changing their lifestyle, not running through the drive-thru for the dollar menu or whatever it happens to be. So it is kind of a, sometimes it feels like it might be a little weaponized unjustly and at the cost of our health, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And I believe it. I mean, I do think that the ultra-processed food manufacturers, they are pretty nervous about that, because I've listened to a few interviews with people who are on these medications, and they, some of them, I can't speak for all of them, they literally feel like their taste buds change. Like, they just don't want these ultra processed foods. Like, they're craving different foods. So yeah, if your bread and butter is giving the American people processed foods, of course those companies are going to be a little bit nervous about it. Certainly. And the other thing with keeping, you know, looking at the big picture, although I don't know what's going to happen with this. Like, I almost feel like these GLP-1s, not that they should be in the water and everybody should be taking them, but because they seem to have all these neuro and anti-inflammatory effects, like, you know, maybe a lot of people use these at very low doses, more long-term. But at some point, if you're doing this medication for weight loss, and so you hit your goal weight, well, you don't want to stay on them forever. So you've got to have these other tools in place of, like, I know how to eat well, and I know how to exercise, and my thyroid and hormones are balanced out. In fact, there was one study rather recently that they were looking at people who are on, women who are on hormone replacement. They're on GLP-1s by themselves, or they're on GLP-1 and hormone replacement. And the women who are on estrogen and progesterone hormone replacement lost more weight than being on just the GLP-1s alone. So that's more of a tool of, like, okay, you know, it's balancing out the whole picture for when you get off of these, be able to maintain the weight loss and the health that you've gained from them.
And if somebody is on a GLP-1 and they're seeing the benefits, and I would think, I mean, just in my head, I'm thinking, you know, if the weight is coming off and doing all the things in the diet, the lifestyle changes, and the body's, you know, that regenerative piece is actually happening, you're healing the body. And, you know, as the weight comes off, that impacts, weight loss impacts everything, your blood pressure, the fat, all of it. So there's, you know, there's not a bad thing to weight loss. Coming off of a GLP-1, is that difficult to do? Is there a way to do that just incrementally? Or how can somebody just stop cold turkey?
Right. I think it depends on the dose. So say I had a patient who was on the highest dose of Ozempic, and they had been on it, and they're ready to get off. Well, first of all, I don't feel like anybody should, not anybody, not many people should probably be on the highest dose anyway, because it's just suppressing their appetite. They're not learning, you know, they're not eating well. But if you were on a higher dose, I think it's going to have to be, you know, reducing gradually is the way to go. And there's different things. Like, there's a bacteria in our gut, in our GI tract, called acromantia, that you need to be able to produce GLP-1 naturally. There are some things like berberine that have been shown to help you produce GLP-1 naturally. So I think that's also important when people are going off of them, to make sure, do you supplement with acromantia, or switch over to some of these supplements that will help you continuing to produce your GLP-1? Because we don't, like you asked in the beginning, hey, is there a blood test for us to be able to tell? Well, there's not. So, you know, are these people needing the GLP-1 agonist because they're not making enough GLP-1? I don't know. But there's no reason that we can't facilitate their own body to keep producing more. So that would be an important thing to do. So wean off slowly, and support your body to be able to do, you know, production more efficiently on your own.
And Michelle, if somebody's wanting to explore this and talk with their physician, is there advice on that, or how do we need to see an endocrinologist? If we just start with your PCP, how do we navigate that?
Definitely. I think just talking with your PCP, your primary care physician, unless they've been living under a rock, everybody's heard about these. Now, the hard part is going to be, say somebody belongs to, you know, a medical group or, you know, unfortunately, like these big hospitals, et cetera, they're going to be restrained on like, hey, you know, you're only going to be able to get Ozempic or Wegovy if you meet the criteria of being diabetic or, you know, having obesity. They're going to be pretty limited in prescribing these medications and getting it paid for by insurance. But your PCP can prescribe it what's called off-label. Like, they can prescribe it for you, but you might pay out of pocket. Well, that's the hard, you know, that's the difficult part. Most people aren't going to be able to pay out of pocket for the Wegovy and Ozempic, which are the pens. And again, it's the how the pens release the medication, which makes them so expensive. If that is out of the question, which for most people it is, because I've heard estimates from $1,200, you know, just $1,600 per month if you're paying out of pocket. That's where the compounded semaglutide, tirzepatide would be an option. A lot of functional medicine doctors, naturopaths, are more aware of that option. You could bring it up with your PCP. They might not, you know how to do that that prescription, and that might be something that you have to go a little further to, again, a naturopathic or a functional medicine doctor who's more knowledgeable about compounding prescriptions.
There's so much here to digest, and I hope
the
education, the deep dive, you know, wondering if any of this resonates with us, with those listening, you know, some of the health issues that you might be battling. But I think definitely doing that deeper dive, because social media and some of the not necessarily more influencers have really passed judgment on this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder, well, do you not want us healthy if this is a way to get there? Isn't that the whole thing, is to get healthy, get the weight off, and adapt that lifestyle, which is what this is, at least the way I see it, is really promoting. Mm-hmm. And with your physician, somebody that's knowledgeable in it. I think this really opens that door. Probably wasn't what everybody was hoping it was going to be. It was just talking about weight loss and the miracle drug and all this, but we'll touch into that into next month's episode. Yes. Talking more about that and what to expect. I mean, those side effects and how to apply it and how to avoid them. And what that means if you are having them. So So we're not done with the GLP-1 conversation.
No, we're not. These are like the other health benefits, but hopefully it gave people some understanding of the other benefits and, you know, why. And I feel like not anything that you're taking, whether it's medication or even a supplement, it really shouldn't be used in isolation. It's understanding your whole body is a symphony, and you know, all these instruments have to work together to work optimally. So, yeah, hopefully this deeper dive into anatomy and physiology, and hopefully it wasn't too much, will set the stage for like, okay, I'm understanding it's doing a lot of good things in your body, but absolutely, the number one thing that my patients are asking, you know, about is weight loss. And I'd be happy to talk about that next time.
And Michelle, where can people go if they want to maybe reach out to you, maybe do a consult? What's your website?
The best way is probably via my website, which is drjacksonnd.com, or you can email us at office@drjacksonnd.com. Office phone number for my wonderful office staff is 541-385-0775.
Well, again, this is awesome, and I look forward to our next discussion. It just made me laugh in my head when you said that our body is a symphony, which it is. It should be this well-oiled, but I got to tell you, I'm like, God, sometimes I just feel like one big tuba. It's just like, and I know I'm not alone in that.
I know. Sometimes I feel like a sticky clarinet where I'm just like,
I mean, we got to find the humor too. We can't just.
Yep. So.
Well, again, I appreciate this. And then we will talk. I think March 12th is our next conversation. A little, you know, more of the weight loss part of the GLP-1. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dawn.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dawn Newton Podcast. And a special thank you to Dr. Michelle Jackson joining us today to talk all things GLP-1. Stay tuned for part two, where we're going to dive into the GLP-1 and the weight loss benefits, the how-tos, the side effects, all things GLP-1. For more information about Dr. Jackson, drjacksonnd.com is the place to go. And be sure and check out my website, dawnnewton.com. The Dawn Newton Podcast is written, produced, and hosted by Dawn Newton.